This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 High FM. It is 6 minutes past 11. Vusi, thank you so much for pushing the buttons. Craig is, I'm sure, on a well-deserved holiday. The poor guy is always behind the controls, always making sure that I'm on time and behave myself, and always making sure that I get things done in time and in line. Vusi, it's really nice to have you back there. And Craig, I really hope that you have a great break. We're going to be discussing crypto today, and not only crypto, but the ability to buy crypto together with other funds like Ethereum, together with other stocks, all through a bundled account that you can get here in South Africa. The company is called Luno. I'm sure you've heard about them. We've interviewed them on the show a few times many years ago when crypto was still in its infancy, so to speak. And now they've really grown, and they have partners with some of the major leading insurance companies in the country, in investment companies, allowing you to get access to that. So the moment they join us, which is scheduled for 11:15, we will bring them on board. A lot of messages that come through to me during the week, a lot of them have increased over the last 24 hours as to how things are over here. And I don't want to be blasé about it or even dismissive about it, but things here in Israel continue as normal. A friend of mine had a procedure in a hospital yesterday, and obviously because of technology and AI, that hospital came up in a news feed because I was talking about it, and they prepared 200 underground beds in case something should happen with Iran. But the average person on the street, everything goes on per normal. Kids are walking to school, people are going to work, life happens. We haven't got this anxiety that we had during the 12 days of Rising Lion or Midnight Hammer. Those levels are not here at the moment. And we need to appreciate that there's also two-tiered system of security here in the country. There's one that happens generally, so you'll hear on the news, something will come through on your phone. There's a system where the moment there is a missile heading towards a particular area, your phone goes. But there's also a city initiative in every single area. So if you live in a very small area, you might be clustered together with one or two villages close by, Yishuvim or Kibbutzim. But in larger cities like Modi'in, where I live, Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Beit Shemesh, you'll have your individual, what we call Kita Konanut, which is your security section, volunteer run, but it's got its ear to the ground when it comes to security threats. And those people are linked directly to the city management, and they will increase or decrease the threats. And what the repercussions of those are very, very direct. So for example, if your threat increases, then gatherings are not allowed. So for example, going to shul, going to the synagogue, a maximum of X amount of people, or a maximum amount of people that the bomb shelter can handle. School will be stopped. School will only start at a certain time. Those type of restrictions. Non-essential businesses will be asked to close. None of that has happened. So life goes on. There's a lot happening behind the scene. Everybody knows somebody who is absolutely certain as to when things are going to happen. But if there's one thing that we learned from the 7th of October, is that no one really knows until we all know. There's definitely intelligence behind the scenes, and a lot happens there. But as far as major things, when we need to know, we will know. And the average person in the street has absolute faith in our mechanisms and our security structures that we will be told things change. So as for now, airlines are flying, things are happening, and nothing to worry about. But going back to our main guest, I see that we have been joined by Christo De Wit from Luno. Christo, welcome to Chai FM.
Hi, Avi. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I need to ask you, are you at home or in a hotel?
I'm at home.
Okay, nice bedroom.
At Luno, we work remotely, but we also have the luxury of having offices, so it's quite a convenient work environment.
Great. Chris, the first thing I need to say to you is congratulations. You guys are the quintessential garage startup, backyard, round the dining room table sort of story. Guys came up with an idea as to how to bring crypto to the man on the street, how to demystify it. I see that you've made, you formed partnerships with, I would like to think, one of the leading insurance companies in South Africa on their investment platform, which is absolutely phenomenal. And just really congratulations. It just shows that when the critics speak about South Africa as it has been, and certain parts of the population being defranchised and having no future, it just shows that when there's the will, there's the way. And people are dedicated to building a country and really doing something fantastic. So really, as you say, kol hakavod to you and your team and your partners, and well done for doing it. But before we get into where you've gone off on a tangent and now bundling things together, Chris, let's just go back to step one. And this is an area that I find absolutely fascinating, and that is explaining complex ideas to people, because nine times out of 10, they're not that complex. It's just like this wall that's thrown up. No, it's beyond my understanding. And then you go and speak to someone and they just speak jargon. As I said last week, my son, who's in startups here in Israel, was speaking to a youngster who's just started his degree in some fancy computer thing, but spent 3 years in the army in their intelligence division. And I sat in the conversation with a big smile on my face because I didn't understand a word these two guys were talking. And there was just the synergy, this understanding of each other, of how things work. So let's just break down what crypto is once again and how it affects our lives and where the future is.
Thanks, Avi. Yeah, I think the fascinating thing about crypto is if you really go back to the history of it, it was essentially started and just really simplified as what they call internet money, right? So if you look at the Bitcoin white paper, which was released in the beginning of 2009, right after that 2008 financial crisis, it essentially was to create a means of paying peer-to-peer, meaning person-to-person, in some form of money via the internet, right? And essentially what it wanted to achieve was to cut out the middleman, which in this case was back then the banks who had failed during the 2008 financial crisis. And that was the ethos of almost democratizing money and access to money and making it available and accessible to all. Now, obviously, fast forward to 2026, there's been so much development in this space, and it really kind of, I wouldn't say have departed from that original ethos, but there's been so much development and so much utility that's been brought into this space that it is completely a different beast altogether as we sit now. And now where we find ourselves is that crypto, not only Bitcoin, but all other cryptocurrencies and blockchain, is still en route to really upgrade the global financial system to bring access to some form of financial stability to people who wouldn't necessarily have access to it. Now, that's obviously a very rosy-eyed dream, but I think if we look at the development from 2008, 2009 to where we are today, with the rise of stablecoins, with the rise of new investment vehicles, with the access to different markets, which crypto and blockchain enables, we've really seen quite a significant development and progress on that front.
So, are we at the stage yet where I can pay via crypto for an upcoming holiday? The Davids and the Kays decide that we are going to Thailand, and can this be done entirely on crypto?
Interesting question, and I think you can, but it's not yet to that level where it's fully mainstream. So, with products like LunoPay, which we've incorporated into our platform, it is possible to use your cryptocurrency to make payments for everyday goods and services. And this could even be for holidays. You could go to an online retailer that accepts QR payments with the LunoPay rails in the background that accepts LunoPay as a payment method. But that payment is not purely in cryptocurrency. It utilizes my cryptocurrency and then converts that to fiat or rand. And that is then settled to the merchant. So we are not yet in that space where I think that mainstream adoption is, where we decide to collectively use our cryptocurrency or our crypto and our crypto wallets and pay, for instance, an airline or a travel agent or a hotel in cryptocurrency. I don't think that level of adoption exists, but we are making significant progress where that is adopting and growing. And I think that also speaks to the rise of stablecoins, because stablecoins is essentially a cryptocurrency that has a one-to-one ratio to a stable asset, in most cases, a fiat currency. And the most popular stablecoins are, USDT and USDC, which are linked or tracks the dollar and has that one-to-one ratio to the dollar. That will, I think, further democratize the acceptance and the adoption of cryptocurrency. And the fascinating thing about that is that, if payments are settled on the blockchain, it's near instant, right? I think most of your listeners would have made a cross-border payment of some sort of another, and that there are delays. It takes, 3 to 5 business days for those amounts to settle, funds to settle, and there are significant costs involved. The blockchain solved this immediately, where crypto payments are near instant. The blockchain is super transparent. You can easily see where the funds are coming from and where they're going, and it's cost-effective. So we are moving and we are making progress in this front, but I don't think we are yet at that mainstream adoption level.
So we need to stop for an ad break. I'm just writing down, there are two words that are coming across my screen all the time. The one is criminals, and the other one is Trump. And those are two big questions that people are asking. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, let's dive into, I think, two different words, criminals and Trump, and see how they work.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. It is 21 minutes past 11. 12 almost rolls off my tongue because we've been doing that for so many years, but it's still 21 minutes past 11. And I know this might sound funny, but often when we do a comparison between costs in South Africa and costs in any other places in the world, yes, South Africa is no longer cheap as it used to be, so to speak. But retailers are really making a big effort to bring in goods that they are paying in foreign currency for and still make it cost effective in rands. Let's go back to our guest, and that is Christo de Wit from Luno. Christo, criminals and Trump. Just to give some context, people are asking, and it's obviously been hot stuff in the news. Every movie you speak about, you watch about where, there's a transaction that's happening. It's no longer Swiss bank accounts. It's through crypto. And Donald Trump and his sons have come up with this idea to sort of take down the borders across banks universally and just have one currency, and that would be a cryptocurrency. It's been delayed. It's not really going to happen just now, but the concept is there. Talk us through these two ideas, please.
So I think, first of all, it's absolutely right. Like, crypto is a hot topic, especially when it comes to people utilizing it for, nefarious activities and transferring funds illicitly. But I think you have to look at the broad picture, the bigger picture here. If we compare crypto with, just traditional fiat or US dollar-based currency, then US dollars are still mostly used for illicit activities compared to crypto, right? It's not that crypto is now being seen as this new vehicle that criminals globally use to send funds. I think in the early days, because there weren't that many reporting frameworks, regulatory frameworks in place, it may have become an easy vehicle for criminals to utilize. If we look at one of the most recent Chainalysis reports on this, and Chainalysis is a tracking platform that tracks crypto transactions between addresses, because everything on the blockchain is transparent and open, and they reported that less than 1% of all crypto transfers globally account for illicit activity. So it's actually really, really a very small portion of all crypto transactions. But it does give a vehicle where, it is anonymous, so to speak. There are opportunities for criminals to utilize this. But as we make progress in this industry and with tools like Chainalysis, for instance, it becomes more difficult to actually get away with it. And I think that then speaks to perhaps this utopian idea of one currency, a global stable coin or a global cryptocurrency that can be utilized everywhere. Because it obviously, if it goes on the blockchain, then it can just be transferred globally easily with ease of use and friction. I think when we perhaps look at Trump and Trump's approach to it, it's very difficult to read the situation. Because if we look at what Trump did in his when he was inaugurated at the beginning of last year, we really saw the markets respond really, really positively and favorably, because he was pro crypto. We saw that that is a wave of optimism, that big structural changes in the US, the world's largest economy, is going to happen and make it more favorable for crypto. But then we also saw, some of the more negative impacts when, on a global stage, Trump responds negatively to certain jurisdictions and countries and imposes tariffs, that the world market responds negatively. And then crypto bears the brunt of that, and we saw significant downturn on that. So I think, it's two sides of the coin here, so to speak, when we look at how Trump is positioning crypto from a global perspective. But I do also believe that, having a global leader in a position where the industry is brought to the fore is a significant development for the industry and helps to make the case for further growth, so to speak.
Chris, I just listened to you speak and the ease and the confidence and the knowledge. You sit down with people and they talk, and there's just often so much clutter that you feel that, no one really knows what they're talking about. And sometimes it's just really important to go back to grassroots. Before we look at crypto as an investment, which is the way a lot of people see it, talk to us about Luno. How you guys started and what your proud little baby is at the moment.
Thanks, Ari. Appreciate it. I think the fascinating story about Luno is, it was started in 2013, albeit under a different name, BitX back then. And it was the first cryptocurrency exchange in South Africa that made it possible for ordinary South Africans to buy Bitcoin with Rand. Right? This wasn't possible. It wasn't possible before BitX, which is now Luno, came to the table. And since then, we've grown significantly. We've expanded globally. We are the biggest regulated cryptocurrency exchange in Malaysia. We are, operational in Nigeria. We've recently relaunched in Kenya. So we've got quite a significant global footprint. And what is fascinating about it is that we went beyond just serving customers, enabling them to onboard Rand to buy Bitcoin, but now we offer a range of cryptocurrencies. We even introduced tokenized stocks last year, which enables ordinary South Africans to get exposure to the US equities market without having, the headache of going through a broker, having to convert FX. So there's been a lot of development in this space. And I think if we look back at those early days in 2013 and where we are in 2026, a fun fact is that Luno is one of the oldest existing and lasting crypto exchanges globally. We really entered the space really, really early on. And we've got that ethos that really underpins everything that we do at Luno, and that is to upgrade the world to a better financial system. So whether it is by expanding the number of assets we have on platform, by introducing different forms of investment products, which we can speak a little bit later on about, or if it is about, having some partnerships with the likes of Discovery Bank, it's all about democratizing that access, which is ultimately driving us to upgrade the world to this better financial system.
You've obviously hit a raw nerve because a lot of people are asking, and people obviously on your website having a look. But I'm just looking at the press release. It says Luno's Blue Chip Plus offers a curated mix of 20% Bitcoin, 10% Ethereum, 70% blue chip US stocks, including Apple, Microsoft, Nvidia, Meta, Google, Tesla, and Amazon. So this is basically a unit trust where you have gone out and chosen which blue chips you want and bundled them together with Bitcoin, 30% Bitcoin and 70% offshore. First of all, why would you bundle the two together?
So I think before we get to that, maybe we take a step back and look at the
Sure.
initial bundle product that we launched. So this is the second bundle investment product that we've launched. The first one was the Luno Large Cap Bundle, and that tracked the large cap cryptocurrencies, right? So we created a bundle and we did a percentage allocation of the major cryptocurrencies. And seeing the success of that and following the launch of tokenized stocks or X stocks on our platform last year, we saw this as an opportunity to really bring to the fore a diversified investment vehicle. And I think it's one of the most unique baskets or bundles of its kind, and maybe one of the first of its kind as well. And I think what we are really trying to achieve with this is bringing a product that enables investors the ease of choice. So it's easy for them to say, okay, I want exposure to cryptocurrency, but I also want exposure to a different di digital access asset, not necessarily just crypto. And what we've done is by allocating 30% to crypto and 70% to tokenized stocks, tracking, the blue chip tech companies in the US, I think we've really enabled a product that almost takes the thinking out of it, but almost and also creates a vehicle that has ease of use and really diversify in terms of risk exposure, volatility exposure. We know that both of these assets, the crypto and the tech stocks, have different risk profiles and they perform a little bit differently if we take a longer term look. Maybe not zooming in on the last few months per se, but if we take a longer term view, they do perform very differently and they do have different levels of volatility. And that to us then creates a vehicle or a product that balances nicely in terms of balancing that high volatility that crypto has versus the more longer term stability that big established corporates and tech companies in the US have.
Kristen, something from my side, your stock pick offshore, who manages it for you guys?
Sorry, Ivy, can you just clarify the question?
So your stock pick, now Apple, Microsoft, do you guys do the stock pick yourself, or are you partnered with a company like BlackRock, where that's helped for you?
John, we manage the allocation on our side, and the bundle, the blue chip bundle, is rebalanced quarterly. So if we looked that there was significant growth in a certain asset class, so let's say for instance, Bitcoin grew to more than 20 or 30% of the total basket value, that balances every quarter to go take back to that allocation that we've determined. And we also then take a look at how each of those individual stocks in the basket is tracking to see if they still meet the criteria to qualify as a top tier blue chip tech stock.
Another question, if I'm looking at a stock like Tesla, for example, Tesla is a very, very interesting stock, but it's gotten major pressures from companies like XPeng and Geely, companies like that in the same place, and in certain segments that are outselling them and outperforming them. Would you look beyond the American market with this product?
So I think for us, what we utilize at this stage, it is purely US stocks, and that's because of X stocks that currently tracks the US equities, right? So that's the product that we've incorporated. As X stocks grow and they incorporate more tokenized equities and tokenized stocks, we would be more than open to look at other options if they meet the criteria that we've set.
Okay, so obviously the hard questions are coming in now. People would like to know, what do I need on a monthly basis, or as a lump sum in order to take advantage of what is being offered?
As with Luna and as with any of our other investment products and crypto assets, really democratizing access and making it as easy as possible for first-time investors. There's no monthly commitment needed. It's whatever the investor chooses to invest, they can choose to invest in this bundle. They can add to their bundle, you know, if and when funds become available. And you know, they can utilize dollar cost averaging strategies as well in terms of investing in this bundle. And they can do that directly on the platform itself. So that once again, no need for intermediary. Whatever they feel they need to or they want to invest in this product, they can as part of their, you know, ongoing and long-term investment strategy, and really looking at diversifying their investment portfolio.
So I've got a message here from Mike. He says, "Yeah, I've just woken up on the West Coast. Obviously, didn't catch the beginning, but can I invest from any country or can I only originate from South Africa?"
So you have to be at the moment, it is available to South African customers. You have to be onboarded with Luno South Africa as a South African customer to take advantage of this product.
Chris, I take it that will be your FICA would need to be up to date.
Yes,
You have to have a
yes.
bank account in South Africa, physical address in South Africa, an ID, and once you've got those three, then you're good to go. Okay. Talk to us a little bit about crypto as an investment. So now we've got this ability to buy it, we've got ability to buy the Blue Chip Plus bundle. How has crypto actually performed as an investment vehicle itself?
You know, I need to be careful how to phrase this because if you have a zoomed in view on what the markets are currently doing, you know, there's a lot of it depends on when people get into crypto. There may be some differing views. I think crypto, with its volatility, and if you look at it as an investment vehicle, it's for the longer term, right? It's not a short-term investment. And I think it is performing very, very well. If you take out the peaks and the troughs and you look at the troughs and you look at specifically what your long-term financial objectives are, I think, you know, when we go through these market cycles and, you know, once investors become more familiar with crypto, they, you know, there's this notion of 4-year cycles where we, you know, Bitcoin rallies and then other cryptocurrencies follow, but it generally moves in an upward direction, right? Now, obviously, this is not financial advice, and you know, historical
Absolutely.
performance can't be used for future gains. But I mean, I think just taking a step back and looking at the more holistic growth that crypto and certain cryptocurrencies have made, I think we can see that it is a longer term investment. It's not necessarily for the short term because of the high volatility ratio that it carries. You know, an interesting comparison that I usually see when the market is in a little bit of a shakeup, as it is at the moment, is when if you buy a property, whenever the property market goes up or down very, very drastically, you know, you don't necessarily see people putting all of their property on the market. And I think you need to take perhaps a similar approach to crypto. When the market does what it does and it goes through these quite vicious cycles, so to speak, is to take a longer term view and not necessarily get anxious and stress about taking your crypto out. But then speaking as well, obviously it depends on an investor's risk appetite, how much of their investment portfolio is allocated to crypto, how much liquid funds they need access to. So I think there's a lot of things that goes into it. But from my own personal perspective, I see it as a longer term investment. And you know, I firmly stand by its future growth potential.
Well, we clearly see how it's developed and how it's moved, and et cetera, et cetera. Chris, just before we go to the break, I remember 4, maybe more years ago, there were people who were really mining crypto. They had got special electrical cables into their homes and built outside rooms with air conditioning. Is that still a popular thing for people in South Africa at the moment?
No, I think crypto mining has completely professionalized. It's not, I think, where we were maybe during the early days up until 2017, 2018, where you could have a few servers in your house running with, you know, some aircon and doing the mining on your own. The amount of computing power needed these days to mine the likes of Bitcoin is just far too immense. And then the cost associated with it just doesn't balance. And I think that's also where we see a lot of the markets going. We look at the profitability of mining. And as soon as certain mining companies see that it's no longer profitable for them to mine Bitcoin, we see a lot of them exit the market. So then we get less and less Bitcoin being added to the supply and the frequency of that Bitcoin being added. So, but I don't think we are in a position anymore, or a space where Bitcoin or crypto mining is something that you just do, you know, for on the side as a hobby. It's completely professionalized, and I mean there are massive mining factories, you know, set up globally that just would not justify you trying to do it from your garage any longer.
Fantastic. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 High FM. It is 18 minutes to 12. And just to let you know, Christo, welcome back. We ended off by saying that having those rooms with all those computers, with where you touch the cable of electricity going into there, it was warm to the touch, air cons running all the time, is just not a viable option anymore, which just really shows the growth and the integrity of it. One of the criticisms that we have around the world when it comes to fiat currencies, and fiat refers to currencies that we can touch and feel, like the dollar, the pound sterling, the rand, is that in a continent like South Africa, you've got all these different currencies, whereas you go from one rand, you go to Mozambique, you've got Metikash, which no one's ever heard of, and you have to have a computer to work out the conversion rates. It's just so ridiculous. Europe tried the euro. It worked. Certain companies like the UK weren't interested. People are now starting to fall off. Would it not just be, as Trump was suggesting, that we all just stick to something universal? And if that was the case, would Bitcoin or a coin like that be something to look at?
It's an interesting perspective. I think, you know, when Trump mentions he wants one coin, you know, we need to read into the subtext that it needs to be a dollar-based cryptocurrency to continue that dollarization of the world and give, you know, further cement the US stronghold in the global economy. But I think from a utopian point of view, I mean, it would solve, I think, significant problems, but I don't necessarily think in practice that is quite realistic. There's just too much that we see that challenges that notion. I think with the context of the Eurozone, where we clearly see, you know, not every European country joined the Euro for their own various reasons. We saw the, I mean, if you guys, and I'm sure some of your listeners will be able to remember when a lot of these European countries went onto the Euro, the absolute destabilization that there were in these markets. I remember quite vividly, I think it was Italy when they went from the lira to the euro, you know, how something cost 1 lira and then the next day it cost 1 euro, but the discrepancy was so big. So, you know, I think that it's a quite a long shot off. But if we look perhaps maybe closer to home, and if you look at South Africa and the South African rand, you know, the South African rand is used in Namibia, even though they have the Namibian dollar, it's tied to the South African rand, Eswatini, Lesotho. So that notion, I think, in South Africa or Southern Africa already exists. And I think if we look at then potentially having a South African rand-based stablecoin, which we, in partnership with a few other major financial players in South Africa, you know, we supported the launch of ZARU or ZARU, which is ZAR Universal. It drives to solve that problem of a more globally accepted South African rand stablecoin. And I think if you look at the South African rand, you know, there's a lot of critique and criticism that comes to the local currency, even though the South African rand has had a stellar performance over the last you know 8 to 12 months against the dollar. If we look at it from a global perspective, I think it's the 18th most traded currency in the world. For an economy of our size, that's quite significant, right? So then if we look at the potential that a rand-based stablecoin has in terms of simplifying cross-border trade in Africa for institutions that are multinational, especially across the African continent, it solves a lot of problems and logistical nightmares.
But the South African rand also punches way above its weight when it comes to intercontinental trade between South Africa and other third world countries and within Africa itself. But Christo, while we were chatting, I asked my buddy over here, Chat, to just to go back in the history for us. What was the Greek currency called before the euro came in?
It's like trivia. I have no idea. I
It was
don't
called the Greek drachmas.
drachmas.
And its conversion rate was, when it came in, was 1 euro to 340.75 drachma. So I remember the reason I looked it up, because I remember the thing about Italy, but I also remember about Greece getting this massive get out of jail free card where you were so buggered, excuse the French, that your economy was going nowhere. And you just hopped on this wave and you just
Yeah.
rode your way out of it. And it was a quite an interesting experience.
And
But
to add it, it wasn't the last get out of jail free card for Greece.
but again, if you look at the real and some of the strong Middle East currencies, the exchange rate isn't always an expression of weakness. It's somehow just the way things are structured. There's been a lot of criticism towards the rand, that the rand should be stronger, the rand should be weaker. And, for all the nonsense that happens in South Africa, the fact that the rand is free floating to a greater or lesser extent really allows the true value to come through as it is. Krista, as usual, we're up against time. Before we have the last ad break, where's Luna going?
So I think very interesting. We saw the development, democratizing access, giving South Africans access to Bitcoin very, very early on, introducing crypto. And I think just coming back to that, we in South Africa we have just over 6 million customers. So every single South African, or almost every single South African that have touched crypto or holds crypto or have delved into crypto in the past have done so at one point or another through Luno. And I think having that massive customer base, I think the opportunity for us going forward is to further promote Luno as a platform that not only can be used to diversify investment in forms of cryptocurrency, but can be used as an essential vehicle in building wealth. And I think that's how we see ourselves, as a wealth-building platform that makes it possible for ordinary South Africans to diversify the investments and move away from just crypto. So I think we see a lot of opportunity in terms of bundles, more bundles to come, staking, earning yield on certain cryptocurrency products. So the opportunity, and I think the future, is looking quite bright.
You said you have 6 million users. I've just double-checked that taxpayers in South Africa who file tax returns, 9.2 million South Africans file tax returns, which means that that is your more affluent market. That is your market that is slightly more sophisticated, which means that there's a very good chunk of that market that are clients of yours, which means that predominantly, those who are in the know and those who are able to pay tax because of their earning ability are involved in crypto. Christo, I can't wait for our next interview. It will be in a while, but just to see what you guys have done. And I have said this before to other companies, for example, companies like Taxtum, where young South Africans shut out all the pollution, all the noise, all the criticism, put their heads down and made things happen. The brightest, the cleverest, the most dynamic, regardless of who or what they were, and they built something that now pours money into South African coffers as far as tax is concerned because they are profitable. So really, kol hakavod, congratulations, well done. And you should just continue to do well so that the average South African can benefit from your expertise.
Thanks, Avi, and all credit goes to the incredible people that work for Luno. They are the ones that are driving and building this machine, and they are some of the most talented in the country. So all credit to them.
Fantastic. A humble Christo de Wet, thank you very much. Vuzi, thank you for pushing the buttons. Thank you for listening. We will chat to you next week.